Esther 2, verse 8. So it was when the king's command and decree were heard, and when many young women were gathered at Shushan the citadel, under the custody of Haggai, that Esther also was taken to the king's palace, into the care of Haggai, the custodian of the women. So what command and decree was that all of the beautiful young women in the whole area were to be brought to this palace to undergo what they're going to talk about, be a year of preparation, beautification preparation. And Esther was one of these young women that was grabbed up, and they did not have a choice in this matter. They were taken by order of the king. So there was no refusal in this. Now the young woman pleased him, and she obtained his favor. So Esther pleased this custodian, Haggai, that was a eunuch, and he's in charge of these young women. And so Esther found favor in Haggai, and because of this, he's going to give her preferential treatment. She maybe including some better beauty preparations, but also he puts her to the front, toward the front of the line, of ahead of a bunch of these other young women. So this Haggai, the eunuch that's in charge of these women, readily gave beauty preparations to her besides her allowance. Then seven choice maidservants were provided for her from the king's palace. And he moved her and her maidservants to the best place in the house of the women. So she has really found favor in this foreman. And so because of that, he's given her seven choice maidservants and moved her into the best place in this house, and with these beauty preparations. Verse 10. Esther had not revealed her people or family, for Mordecai had charged her not to reveal it. So Mordecai told her, don't let anyone know that you're a Hebrew. And so she does not. And that's charged again. He tells her again in this chapter. She holds to that. And Mordecai does not tell either anyone. No one knows that he is a Hebrew either. And that plays an important part later on in this, which initiates at the end of this chapter. At verse 11, and every day Mordecai paced in front of the court of the women's quarters to learn of Esther's welfare and what was happening to her. So Mordecai, since he is some kind of officer in Xerxes' court, he's able to be right here, and he's able to check on her every day and make sure that she's not being mistreated or anything. And he's finding out that she's getting preferential treatment even. Verse 12, each young woman's turn came to go in to King Ahasuerus after she had completed 12 months preparation according to the regulations for the women. For thus were the days of their preparation appointed, 6 months with oil of myrrh and 6 months with perfumes and preparations for beautifying women. Okay, Adam Clark, he was a commentator that lived in the 17 and early 1800s, but in the last part of the 1700s. And I think this is the first time that I've read something from him. Other times I read him and I might just say something, one or two things that he mentions, but I thought this was a pretty good commentary on what they thought of the 1700s on their uh, social norms and how they would control body odor is what he talks about here. So I thought that was somewhat interesting, so I copy and pasted this page. The wording is a little strange. It's because he writes from the 1700s, but I just I didn't modify it. I just changed a word or two that was antiquated that we wouldn't know what they meant. But other than that, I left the sentence structure the same. But this is about this 6 months with oil of myrrh. Adam Clark said, the reason for this purification seems not to be understood by any commentator that Clark had read. And so he's going to explain this. He said, the most beautiful of all the young virgins of all the provinces of Babylon were to be selected. And these were taken out of all classes of the people indiscriminately. Consequently, there must have been many who were brought up in low life. These were the commoners, the peasants. Now we know that those who feed on coarse, strong food, which is not easily digested, have generally a lot of perspiration, which is strongly odorous, and in many, this odor is far from being pleasant. Okay, so I thought this was pretty interesting. He said that they know in their day that the reason why people sweat a lot is because they are eating coarse, strong food, which I'd like to have known. I wish he would have said what this food was. And he said this coarse, strong food is not easily digested, and so then they sweat a lot. And then he said this sweat is strongly odorous. Now, whenever I was at college at Southwestern, studying about aromatics and perfumes and scents that are volatile oils. And the professor talked about perfumes that were used in the Renaissance period, which would have been right here in this time, like the 1500 to 1700 time period. And what our professor said is, everyone had very strong body odor back in those days. They did not have running water. They had to haul water into the house. They didn't have any plumbing, so they had to haul water out of the house. And as a result, they were not able to take many baths. And so bodily cleanliness was, it was not a priority, and it was, in fact, a heavy burden. So as a result, the body odor was quite strong with everyone. And then, of course, the lower the class the person, the stronger the odor. And so what our professor said is they needed a perfume to cover up this heavy body odor. And so they could not make anything synthetically like we can today. So they had to look into the natural world, and they needed some very strong scent to cover up this very strong body odor, which Clark has even mentioned. He mentioned the strongly odorous. And so what they found was the best thing to cover it up was skunk scent. It was the skunk spray. And so that's what they would use as the base for the perfume. Then they would add other oils to that. But the base that had to cover up the human body odor was the skunk scent. And that just lets us know how bad the body odor was in the 1700s. And since he was talking about it, I thought, well, this is the perfect time just to go ahead and bring this out. And I thought it was comical putting together what our professor had told us back, nearly 30 years ago. Then Adam Clark finishes up here with a pure, wholesome, easily digested, and nourishing diet with the frequent use of the hot bath continued for 12 months will make the body pleasant to society. So instead of this coarse, strong food that's not easily digested, the person needs to eat a pure, wholesome, easily digested, and nourishing diet. And with the frequent use of a hot bath, which was not easy for them to obtain, and then and do that for 12 months, and then the body frequently rubbed with olive oil will in almost every case remove all that is disagreeable of this kind. And this kind, of course, is the body odor. So you eat a better diet, not this coarse, strong food, whatever that is, and then a frequent hot bath. You do that for 12 months and rub your skin with olive oil, and that will remove the disagreeable body odor, is what he was saying. This treatment will give a healthy action to all the subcutaneous vessels and in every respect promote health and comfort. So this is what they told, this was what their common knowledge was in the 1700s about how to control body odor better. I thought that was somewhat interesting. Verse 13. Thus prepared, each young woman went to the king, and she was given whatever she desired to take with her from the women's quarters to the king's palace. In the evening she went in, and in the morning she returned to the second house of the women, to the custody of Shazgaz, the king's eunuch who kept the concubines. So now, after they'd been to the king, they were a concubine from here on out, and they were under a different foreman, custodian, eunuch. She would not go into the king again unless the king delighted in her and called for her by name. And so now I'm back on to Kaufman's commentary, what he wrote about this verse, about in the evening she went and in the morning she returned. Kaufman said, "Where are there any sadder words than these? One frightful night in bed with Ahasuerus, and the next morning relegated to the status of a concubine, never more to see him unless called by name, and the odds are that he did not even remember the names of half of them, and the text states that there were many of these women." Okay, verse 15. "Now when the turn came for Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her as his daughter to go into the king, she requested nothing but what Haggai, the king's eunuch, the custodian of the women, advised, and Esther obtained favor in the sight of all who saw her. So Esther was taken to the king Ahasuerus into his royal palace in the 10th month, which is the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. The king loved Esther more than all of the other women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins. And she set the royal crown upon her head, and he set the royal crown upon her head, and made her queen instead of Vashti. Then the king made a great feast, the feast of Esther, for all his officials and servants, and he proclaimed a holiday in the provinces and gave gifts according to the generosity of a king." So what Kaufman says about this is, only God Almighty could have brought to pass such a thing as this. This humble Jewish maiden, an orphan dependent for her living upon the charity of her cousin Mordecai, this girl became the first woman in all Persia, the wife of the most powerful living monarch on earth, the queen of an empire comprised of more than half of the known world at that time. God sent Joseph to be seated next to the throne of Egypt. He brought up Moses in the palace of Pharaoh and made him an heir to the throne. In the land of their captivity, he made Daniel the third ruler in the kingdom. And now when Satan would again make a move to destroy the Israelites in Persia, God placed Esther in a strategic position to prevent it. And it happened again with both Ezra and Nehemiah, who had earned and received the respect of Artaxerxes, which was the heir to Xerxes. We cannot rule out the very great probability that it was the influence of Esther that, in part at least, had resulted in the honors that came to both Ezra and Nehemiah. He's saying that this may have had a much broader reach Esther may have had with the next generation of the next king, possibly, that helped save more Israelites in the day with Ezra and Nehemiah. Verse So verse 19. When the virgins were gathered together a second time, Mordecai sat within the king's gate. Now Esther had not revealed her family and her people, just as Mordecai had charged her, for Esther obeyed the command of Mordecai as when she was brought up by him. So she just did everything that Mordecai had told her to do. And even though now she's a queen, she's still in contact with Mordecai and still following whatever orders and commands that he gives her. So from here, Mordecai is going to discover that there is an assassination attempt on the king, and so he's able to stop that, and they stop this insurrection. And Lord willing, we will pick up with verse 21 next week and cover that.